Welcome to COVID Cast. COVID Cast is a Working Together Against Corona campaign made possible by Search for Common Ground Nigeria with the financial support of the European Union. Its content are the sole responsibility of Search for Common Ground and do not necessarily reflect the views of the European Union. The campaign is aimed at supporting an effective conflict-sensitive response to COVID-19 pandemic in a way that prevents further deterioration of social cohesion in a fragile context in Nigeria. I am Joey Shekwonujumbo. So today I'll be having Prince Charles Dickson, PhD. He is the team lead Totona Roundtable Initiative, that is TRI Center. Nice to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you so very much.
Today we are going to talk about COVID-19, uniting fragile communities amidst security and economic realities. To begin with, how has COVID-19 affected security in Nigeria?
Well, I think COVID-19 as a health issue has exposed the fragility or the fragile nature of our security construct. It has brought to the fore the fact that there is an inadequate or almost a non-existent security architecture. Let's not forget very quickly that before COVID-19, we're grappling with the realities of a disintegrating security system. What COVID-19 has possibly done is to probably escalate open to the fore, bring us away from the shadows of the realities to what the reality is. So I think, one, as a health pandemic, it's just actually exposed how fragile we are as a country.
So how would you describe our economic reality in present time?
Well, I think it also shows that, one, as a country, we are not necessarily insulated from the global economy, which has also been affected. I beg to, not exactly as an economic expert, but to say that our system has been largely protected for more than one than obvious reasons. And it could also be, for example, the fact that Nigeria is a cash-based system where you have so much in terms of what's available in circulation. Of course, people would say yes in few hands. We do agree, but I think that has helped given the fact that you have a population that is largely from mouth, hand to mouth. I think that has helped insulate. But of course, with the COVID restrictions, it also exposed the reality. It helped us figure out that if we run the kind of economic system we currently run and we don't make some serious adjustments, then doomsday is not pretty far away.
Thank you very much. Can you help us outline the thin line between the pandemic and the current security that we have in Nigeria?
Well, the thin line between that pandemic and where we find ourselves is, one, for those of us who are concerned with population studies, it tells you that a population at 200 million and counting, and with a population explosion in front of us, the pandemic has been able to narrow that line to the realities of, we have a youthful population. That youthful population is largely unemployed. That youthful population has unemployable large scale ratio. That youthful population doesn't seem to have a way forward. And that's pretty dangerous, very, very dangerous. It simply means that at the rate we're going, that youthful population is a disaster in the making. And why do we say so? The pandemic came with the closure of the systems as we know it. The new normal. It also exposed the fact that a country such as Nigeria, take for example tertiary education, was ill-prepared. Did we have the technology know-how? No. Primary schools were shut down, social systems were shut down, and then you had that same large population to cater for. How could we do that? We didn't have a heated-toe social security system where people got stipends from government at monthly intervals. That didn't exist. So that has also brought to the bear the need for us to look inwards, as in how do we tackle this? Let me quickly say this. We often say, if COVID came, what happens if another thing beyond COVID does come?
Wow, that's a very huge question. So let's talk about how fragile communities can have a common ground. Now, what should be the common ground for fragile communities during crises like this?
Well, interestingly, for a country where ethno-religious, political, economic differences, a divide between the proletariat and the bourgeois, an elitist system is part of what plagues the nation. For communities, cohesion is always beyond conversation, is a thing that we typically search for as peace experts and development workers. And how do we look for it? Amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, one of the things we've been able to do is to look at communities that are fragile in nature and be able to bring them across the board to understand that just like the COVID-19 pandemic, conflict itself does no one any good. Like we jokingly would say, a bullet has no one's identity name once it's shot. And so what we've done is to bring communities where are from heated to divided cities, divided communities, divided suburbs, to be able to look at the pandemic with one voice, one outlook. How do we solve it? I worked in a community where I said to, and it was an interfaith intervention, where we said to the communities, there are no Islamic or Christian methodology to taking care of COVID. The fact that COVID's protocol is applicable to both faiths tells you that the same way peace is applicable to both faiths. It's not, you're not going to use a different hand sanitizer for a Christian and use human a different condition. It's a human condition. There's no vaccine for Christians, no vaccine for Muslims. You can only build cohesion by knowing that if you don't use your mask, if you don't respect the social distancing, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim, you'll get affected or infected by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so such narratives, especially in the light of the fact that before now, some of the misinformation, some of the disinformation, some of the rumor had also come out from so-called religious and traditional institutions in these communities. It was important to diffuse it, teaching them these protocols as it affects the peace in those communities.
All right. Thank you very much. If you're listening, we are talking about COVID-19, uniting fragile communities amidst security and economic realities. Just so you know, you can pause right now, go listen to the previous episode where we talked about how the economy and, of course, insecurities are affecting us as a people. So today we are still having this conversation with our guest. The next question I would like to ask is, how does crisis affect our economic realities in present time?
Well, we often have said that crisis is a two-edged sword that does no one any good. And for a country like Nigeria, 364 plus ethnic nationalities, we always say that if the crisis does happen, what you would have scattered across this geographical expression will be ethnic militias. So I wish it was a conflict in the sense of the positivity of conflict. We're looking at peace vis-a-vis negative and positive peace. But in the Nigerian construct, the crises we've had are crises of confidence, crises of leadership, crises of the economy, crises of the polity. And when we say so, for example, let me take 1 second to dwell on, pretty much 1 second to dwell on the crisis of the polity, where the electoral systems are pretty much messed up. We can't talk about electronic voting in 2021. The Electoral Act is still being tinkered with. That's a crisis of the polity itself, where political parties pretty much don't have ideologies. Politics is seen as one fleecing business for the political class. And then let's look at the educational crisis. Beyond COVID, the university sector was on strike for almost a year. It's one in the series of several of them. If you walk into the university as a freshman, you probably will be spending 4, 5, 6, 7 years for a course that should ordinarily take 4 years. Let's look at the health sector. The COVID-19 pandemic exposed that a medical teaching institution in the Plateau, in the state of Plateau, in the city of Jos, didn't even have oxygen, didn't have a ventilator until the yeoman job of some creative young staff of a radio house came to intervene. That's a crisis of confidence in the health sector. You look at crisis in terms of intergenerational health grievances. I always say this, there is a triangle of greed, and that triangle of greed is Wazobia. We tend to think that there's only three ethnic groups that make up a nation of 360 plus ethnic groups, and the divide in terms of resources, land, and political juice position is between those three persons or those three tribes as against the other. So, for example, when we discuss marginalization, which is a current crisis, people don't think of the Biro man, the Tarok man, the Anaguta man, the Nupi man, the Shekiri man. Everybody sees it within the context of just those three tripod ethnic nationality. That in itself is a crisis. And then, of course, it would be foolhardy to turn a blind eye to what we call the nuisances of the new normal. And what's the new normal? Banditry, kidnapping, Boko Haram. These are the new norms where you have to look at the time when I have to go to Abuja or when I have to go to Kaduna. How do I get there? How safe is it? These are new normals. Negotiations between for ransom payments between those bandits, the farmer herdsmen clashes. All this crisis has created an unstable society. An unstable society affects your tourism sector, your direct foreign investment, your perception in terms of global outlook, your ease of doing business. These are all things that crisis does affect, whether you like it or not. It also hits hard at the economy, and I take that very quickly. When we say it hits hard at the economy, I was going through a report, I can't remember which particularly, and we're talking about somewhere close to almost a billion, and that's outrageous in terms of, and in pounds for that matter, in terms of tuition that Nigerian students pay to British schools in London and all over UK. Take that same statistics to how much we pay for healthcare. That's several. And these are monies that could develop that teeming youth population in terms of provision of industries, manufacturing, outfits. And you begin to ask ourselves. And then, of course, particularly, I couldn't have wrapped up this without looking at the crisis of the times. And when we say that, it is lost values. And without necessarily moralizing, the lost values would be on what really counts. So let me particularly, and I'll name names, a manufacturing outfit, would be given $500,000 for first prize essay winner on writing on a particular topic that involves the manufacturing concern. And then, for lack of a better expression, I did like to say someone would have to be naked for a couple of months on TV and get several millions for doing practically nothing. So
can't you just link this to our moral decadence in our society?
Like I said, I didn't want to moralize, but again, it also tells you what we're serving. And when I mean serving, whose interest we're serving. And the reason why the other has a market is because you have a teeming, jobless, young population that's the best way to keep them engaged. And after that, you look for another super story in terms of entertainment to keep them. But at the end of the day, the bulk of the youth population still remains in that conflict, in that crisis. They are willing hands, they're willing tools. It's not just about the devil's workshop. That used to be the former norm, but now the workshop itself is moving. Only recently, in the suburb of just south, somewhere not central Nigeria, a young couple, young lads were picked up. They were manufacturing AK-47. And I listened to the PPRO for the force headquarters, and what struck me was he said, if you weren't an expat, you wouldn't be able to distinguish those AK-47s and the ones that are imported. And then we have the Nigerian Defense Corporation that does have the regulatory responsibility to produce ammunition and arms for the Nigerian forces. Now, these are young people, willing hands, trained and ready to work. Why don't we engage them? So you can imagine, if you cut those couple of young boys, you don't know how many of them are out there. You don't even know how many of these arms they've sold. So you see that it's not just a crisis, it's a conflict that will do nobody any good. And in the light of the conversations around this COVID-19, just imagine a war and outbreak, a third or fourth wave of COVID-19 in a conflict situation.
So what then are the ways communities can be united amidst security and economic realities?
The fact is, there needs to be a renewed sense of urgency in building community cohesion. There needs to be a renewed sense of realization that the economic wherewithal is one for all for one. There needs to be a renewed sense of reasoning that says, look, it's about the creator, not the creation. And if we look at it from the perspective that the Almighty, whichever you ascribe to, whichever faith, makes no mistake. Like I say in my piece, Interfaith Conversations, if God wanted one ethnic group, he would have made one ethnic group. If he wanted one faith, it would have been one faith. Communities need to realize that. Community needs to realize that there's a common enemy. The common enemy here, COVID-19, the pandemic, the common enemy here is a political elite that has refused to do what's right. And then sometimes the common enemy is the community themselves and their expectation, having suffered expectation fatigue. There's a need, there's an essence to understand that a strong community built with strong cohesion is the only way forward. Let me say this pretty clearly, and it's just a way of counsel to those who should know and are responsible. The security apparatus, the security architecture is not as porous or as bad as we think. But then the political will to act, like you said, building community resilience. We've gotten to that point where we should now begin to honestly look each other in the eye and say, it is time for us to have some sense and some form of community policing. There's nothing wrong in the University of Jos, for example, to have his own security architecture run by people who understand the University of Jos spectrum, location, geography, system, how students and everybody performs and works within that structure and protect it. The Nigerian police is ill-equipped, ill-manned, less of a manpower. Let me put it in direct statistics. 200 million Nigerians, less than a million policemen. It's impossible.
All right. How can we as a people partake in this unity?
It starts from the inside. Sadly, we have angry Nigerians, unhappy Nigerians, permit me to use the word without the mental connotation, sick Nigerians. And I'm looking at the word sick from the perspective of well-being. Nigerians are not happy. Take, for example, the ease of doing business. Joey, I can tell you that you probably want to run a CSO, an NGO, but when you think about what it takes to set it up, you just say to yourself, I'll do it next time, I'll do it next week, I'll do it some other time. The same way you want to run a small poultry business, but you just can't even get registered. And on the papers out there, there's a lot of information as to how this has improved. But in terms of practice, that hasn't improved. I don't want to go into the NSAS protest and what led to it and the pros and cons for it, but it just shows you the discontent. How can you be part of the unity, you said, when a policeman looks at me with my dread and thinks I've been stereotypically labeled as a criminal, or with my beard I'm just a criminal, then we can't. There has to be the decency of when a policeman walks up to you, he says, good afternoon, how are you? Where are you going? That's where it starts from. When someone says to you, how was your day? That's where it starts from. So if you don't get that, we're going to be repeating George Floyd's scenario in every facet of our lives. I listened to the vice president say some couple of hours ago, barely yesterday, that the youth should get off the social media and participate in the political system. The question again, how do we unite from ourselves? We can't when Joey knows that if he's got no money but has the best of goodwill and wants to change his community, nobody would vote for him because he has no money. Politics is expensive. Political party registration is expensive. Political party participation is expensive. So it's pretty much tight. So I did like to sound cautiously optimistic by saying, yes, we could, but we need a massive reorientation. We need to have conversations like this with Joey to be able to reach more people, to be able to get people to fund conversations like this, to get to a bigger crowd, to move this to TV, to move this to cinema, to get it into local dialects via translations. We need to, let me use a very Christian term, we need to evangelize a new Nigeria. There needs to be thesphere service that promotes the Nigerian constructs, the new constructs, the restructured construct, the decentralized constructs. And if we can do that, then we would have said this generation perhaps will be a harbinger for a better one in future of us.
Thank you very much. As we are wrapping up, this last question is, how can we annul these anomalies that was caused by the pandemic, which has led to insecurity in Nigeria?
Well, we can. The problem is, are we intent on doing it? And the way to answer this is, 1 year after the first and possibly second wave, take my state of domicility, which is Plateau State. The question would be, do we have new health facilities? No. Have we created new primary healthcare centers? No. Have we reinforced, refurbished, refunded the Just Teaching University Teaching Hospital? No. Have we done anything totally different than the last 1 year to the Plateau Specialist Hospital? No.
But the state government did commission some new infrastructures in Just Plateau State. What do you have to say about that?
Maybe sarcastic. It's only in Africa, nay Nigeria, that you see commissioning. The commissioning, you want to walk in somewhere and get good health services. You don't need to commission it. No matter what you commission, Joey, our doctors are leaving. So if you're commissioning hospitals and you don't even have doctors, you're commissioning facilities. I went to a dental center, a federal dental system, and they didn't, a center rather, and they didn't have electricity. And I asked this question, if there was to be a surgery, a dental surgery, a dental operation, a dental process from somebody who was accidented, what would happen? And they all just nudged. It's not about commissioning, Joey. It's about allowing systems work. And that's not running away from the question, how do we change these anomalies? How do we reverse the trend? We can only reverse the trend when we have leadership that is committed, fully, irrevocably committed to getting what's done and doing it right. I didn't delve into the sphere of schools and insecurity in schools. But again, we hear that the Funds for Safe School Initiative has developed wings and moved into some people's private pockets. So the same thing you would understand probably has happened to COVID funds itself. And, you know, we tried, me and you, to navigate away from the palliatives. But again, that wraps, and that takes my wrap on this conversation. If you couldn't trust your political elected leaders, selected leaders with a pack of Indomie, what barely 50 or 30 naira, how do we entrust them with a system that is larger than that? So the only way we can annul this is when we have honest leadership. People often talk about from bottom to top, but we always say a people largely a magnifying glass of what leadership gives to them to show. So until leadership chooses to take responsibility beyond commissioning, until they look at our health systems, have conversation on our economic well-being, until Nigerians themselves choose to want to promote Nigeria, be Nigerian, I think we'll still be on the same pedestal. But I'm hopeful that we will move beyond that.
All right. Thank you very much for being hopeful. So as we wrap up, what are your parting words for today's episode of this podcast?
I want to say it's a fantastic thing. And let me put it in perspective. Just 21 years ago, the word podcast probably didn't even exist in anybody's vocabulary. And it's wonderful to see young people taking their future into their hands, using all formats of the social media and the construct to be able to positively engage. This is also creating space. And like I said, 21 years ago, Joe, if you had to do this, you would need several millions of naira to open a station of some kind. But here we are, having this podcast reaching thousands and thousands of people. I would say kudos. I say kudos to your donors, to the funders, kudos to yourself, and it could only get better.
Thank you very much for being a part of the conversation. And as you know it, our guest has been Dr. Prince Charles Dickson, PhD. Thank you very much for talking to us about what we need to do as a people and also enlightening us about COVID-19, uniting fragile communities amidst security and economic realities. You can go to my website. The website is www.joeyoffair/together against corona. To be a part of the conversation, you can go on all socials. It is all at Joey Off Air. How about you subscribe to all the platforms, that is Anchor, Spotify, Podbean, every podcasting platform. Be a part of the conversation. Make sure you give this podcast a 5-star review to make it visible on Apple Podcasts. The next time, see you. Bye-bye.